A 9-year-old girl spreads 25-cent National Geographic magazines across her bedroom table in a basement apartment, arranging them like I'd seen in fancy homes. Outside, her stepfather punches holes in walls. At school, classmates call her dirty. But in those glossy pages, she gallops across Hungarian plains, churns yak butter on Chinese plateaus, sips coffee in Parisian cafes. The world beyond Sylvan Lake, Alberta becomes more real than the violence surrounding her. What happens when that childhood escape route becomes an adult obsession? When wanderlust transforms from salvation into something far more dangerous? This is the story of how one woman's dreams carried her from poverty to the world's most beautiful places, and then into 460 days of unimaginable darkness. At 19, cocktail waitressing in Calgary, Amanda watched suited professionals complain about corporate jobs over expensive drinks. They wanted stability. She wanted anywhere but here. Her mother had finally escaped Russell's fists and was planning her own travels, proof that leaving was possible. 9 months in, Amanda bought 2 tickets to Venezuela without choosing a specific destination. South America, that was enough. This wasn't reckless youth, it was calculated survival. Every journey followed the same pattern: save money serving drinks, buy a plane ticket, disappear for months. "I'm a traveler," she'd tell people, an identity that avoided questions about her past. Bangladesh, Burma, Pakistan, countries most tourists avoided became her destinations. In Calcutta, she bathed tuberculosis patients at Mother Teresa's charity. In northern Pakistan, she hitchhiked on jingle trucks through mountain passes, drivers refusing payment and sharing meals. But fear follows us. In Kabul's markets, a man jammed a gun into her ribs, leaving a star-shaped bruise and a clear message: "You don't fuck with Afghanistan." Yet something inside whispered back, "Yes, do." That whisper would eventually lead her to Somalia. Meeting Nigel Brennan in Ethiopia changed everything. Their trip to the Danakil Depression revealed shared passion for extreme travel, though his later confession about having a wife shattered any romantic illusions. Heartbreak fueled ambition. Amanda bought a professional camera and reinvented herself. Photography provided legitimacy. Business cards reading "Amanda Lindholt, freelance photographer," opened doors mere travelers couldn't access. In Kabul, networking from the Mustafa Hotel landed her first cover photo, a coochie grandmother with spiderwebbed wrinkles and clear eyes, on Afghan Scene magazine. A security contractor helped her secure credentials with Canadian troops in Kandahar. For 8 days, she experienced war's mundane terror. 3 soldiers died from a roadside bomb during her embed. Baghdad came next, working for Iran's Press TV. She recognized the propaganda and quit after a month. Freelancing for France 24, she covered Iraq's National Symphony Orchestra and returning refugees. At 27, her greatest successes came from war zones. When Nigel emailed from Scotland, she impulsively mentioned Somalia. Despite warnings from Jerome, a French photographer who deemed it too dangerous, Amanda was determined. The whisper had become a roar. Mogadishu in 2008 was a failed state. Warlords, Islamic fundamentalists, and rebel groups carved up territory while civilians starved. Drought caused crop failures, food prices soared, and militias hijacked UN aid trucks. 20 aid workers had been killed that year. An Italian NGO worker warned Amanda and Nigel, "Your head is worth $500,000. On August 23rd, just days after arriving, they departed to visit Dr. Hawa Abdi's IDP camp, a remarkable place where 90,000 displaced Somalis lived under the protection of a heroic gynecologist. Just beyond the final government checkpoint, their car slowed. A dark blue Suzuki blocked the road. A gunman pointed at their windshield. About 12 bandits surrounded them, forced them into a roadside ditch, then separated Amanda from Nigel. A clean-shaven man named Ahmed explained they were soldiers in the Islamic army who suspected them of being spies. After 45 minutes driving through desert, they arrived at a small village compound with high walls and masked gunmen. The house in the sky, Amanda's childhood sanctuary built from magazine pages, had collapsed into a prison with very real walls. They named each location: the bomb-making house, the electric house, the escape house, the tacky house with its flowery bedspread. 8 young men and 1 captain became their captors: Hassam, Jamal, who dreamed of marriage, Abdullah, who wanted martyrdom, Romeo, who wanted to make Amanda his wife, despite his New York graduate school acceptance. After 11 days with no rescue, Amanda and Nigel converted to Islam, receiving new names. She became Amina, meaning faithful and trustworthy. It was a chess move to feel less foreign and therefore less afraid. After 8 weeks, their captors separated them. They communicated by knocking on their shared wall and exchanging hidden notes in the bathroom. Her notes encouraged Nigel to look for one beautiful thing and included drawings of them escaping. Abdullah began sexually assaulting Amanda regularly. After one brutal attack, something extraordinary happened. As she pushed against his chest with hatred coursing through her, a strange calm descended. Her consciousness expanded beyond her body. She suddenly saw Abdullah's life, images of him as a boy running toward an explosion where his aunt died, hiding behind a truck while gunmen massacred neighbors. For one moment, she knew his suffering. This dissociated state nurtured something unexpected: compassion for her captors. They tortured her for 3 days, arms and legs bound, blindfolded, gagged. The pain was excruciating. She soiled herself, lost consciousness, believed she would die. They forced her to call her mother. Everything has changed. Both women wept, understanding the hopelessness completely. That night, Amanda decided to end her life with the rusty razor they'd given her to shave. She waited for morning, making peace with regrets, saying goodbye to everyone she loved. As she reached for the razor at dawn, warmth suddenly spread through her body. Images flashed: beaches, mountaintops, her childhood street, with piercing clarity. Then she noticed a small brown sparrow hopping in the sunlight on her floor. It looked at her, then flew toward the sky. She hadn't seen a bird in nearly a year. Having always believed in omens, she took this as a message: she would survive and go home. To endure mentally, Amanda built elaborate sanctuaries in her mind, entire cities where she could live freely. She developed a gratitude ritual each evening, mentally blessing everyone she loved. A calmer voice emerged: "It's only your body that's suffering, and you are not your body." After 460 days, strangers removed their chains. When a gray-haired man handed Amanda a phone with her mother saying, "Amanda, you're free," she couldn't process the words. Her legs, unaccustomed to movement, felt like stumps as she and Nigel stumbled through a hotel garden. Freedom didn't mean healing. Nearly 4 years later, a banana peel in class triggered panic. She remembered eating a rotten peel from desperate hunger. She still feared darkness, had nightmares, felt claustrophobic. Her body carried physical memories of shackles. Recovery required therapists, psychiatrists, nutritionists, meditation experts. But Amanda kept moving. She founded the Global Enrichment Foundation to support education in Somalia, including scholarships for 36 Somali women. Several projects operate inside Dr. Hawa Abdi's camp, ironically where they were heading when kidnapped. In 2012, she helped establish a school for Somali refugee women in Nairobi named Rajo, the Somali word for hope. That 9-year-old girl arranging magazines was searching for escape. The woman who emerged from captivity discovered something more profound: survival requires building sanctuaries within ourselves. When the world becomes a prison, hope isn't found in geography. It's found in the small brown sparrow reminding us we can still fly. The truest house in the sky isn't somewhere else. It's the one we carry inside, the one no captor can ever take away.